We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this ninth day of October 2010, and it's a bright sunny day in Sydney with you this morning, and thank you for joining us. Is me, Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and with me is Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, everyone.
Well, this week we've got a show where we'll be talking to Glenn Poole, who is the chair of the Men's Network in England. It's a charitable organisation committed to improving the lives of men and boys in all areas of life, health, education, criminal justice, social justice and fatherhood. But he's perhaps best known for the work he did with Fathers for Justice, and people might remember some of the campaign and the stunts that were performed by Fathers for Justice. So it'll be interesting to talk to Glenn, who's in England. So we'll be crossing to England a little bit later. And I should mention that today, unfortunately, it's going to be a shortened show. We're just going to have the one interview and a bit of news and a bit of the usual features. But we'll have to get away a bit early. And next week, of course, we'll be back with the great big show for International Men's Day. International Men's Day, Friday, 19 November 2010. And that's something which we're looking forward to. And next week's show will be devoted to International Men's Day, and we'll be speaking to people from various locations around the world. Now, in the meantime, just I might mention, give a bit of a plug for the International Men's Day breakfast hosted by Ipswich City Council in, just out of Brisbane. This is being promoted by Sue Price, and we spoke to Sue last week about International Men's Day. Sue would be is very interested in seeing a big presence at the International Men's Day breakfast run by Ipswich City Council. It's been going for a few years, and it's something we should all support. It's good of the council to put on the breakfast, and it draws some attention to International Men's Day. It's something we really should be out there promoting. So if anybody is in the Brisbane or Ipswich area, put this in your diary. It's on Friday, 19 November at 7 a.m. And if you'd like some more information on that, you could go to the Men's Rights Agency website, which is MRA. If you go to MRA at ecn.net.au, or just Google Men's Rights Agency, and you'll get the link. Another activity that's coming up is the Man Alive Festival. This was sent to us by Greg Andreessen. The Man Alive Festival 2010 is being held this Sunday in Adelaide. It will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Semaphore Foreshore Reserve, Adelaide, in South Australia, of course. This has been staged successfully since 2004. And it's a free, fun festival celebrating the positive contribution by men in our community, and it promotes their health and well-being. So come along, enjoy the quality entertainment program, the fun activities, and the variety of health and community services. It really is a great day for families and individuals of all ages, and everyone is very welcome. Just to give you an idea of some of the activities, at 10 a.m. there's going to be some traditional Afghan music and the Saffron Tribal Dances. Then 10:55, Son of Dad, who do ska reggae. 11:30, Georgia Germelin, who does pop and folk. Then there's the official welcome, then there's a dance group. And then at 12:50, John Schumann, who's probably well known to our listeners. He former candidate for the Greens Party. He wrote the song I Was Only 19, and individual in the community. He'll be followed by a talk by the Ambassador for the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia, Brian Marshall. And then there are other activities which will take it right through until 4 p.m. So a great day for the family. Now, Phil, you've got something in the news there?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. A couple of items here. As news is, sometimes it can be a bit distressing and a bit ugly. First one off the rank here is from the Herald Sun. Robert Farquharson found guilty of murdering sons J10, Tyler 7 and Bailey 2 last month. A father found guilty twice now for murdering his three sons by driving them into a dam to drown them on Father's Day has again lodged an appeal against the murder conviction. Lawyers acting on behalf of Robert Farquharson logged the relevant papers with the court appeal late yesterday. Last month, a jury found Farquharson, 41, guilty of murdering his sons. And after a very lengthy retrial, in 2007, Farquharson was first sentenced to life without parole. So that's his retrial has basically found him guilty again. On the 15th of October, Justice Lasry sentenced Farquharson to life with a non-parole period of 33 years. So now he's appealing that particular decision as well. So I don't know. We'll move on to the next one. From AAP, Tim Doran writes, mother killed son to expel evil spirit. An Adelaide woman killed her two-year-old son by standing on his mouth and chest because she believed he had been taken over by an evil spirit, a court has heard. Rachel Cherry Hadley, 23, was found not guilty in the South Australian Supreme Court on Friday of murdering the boy. Justice was found to find her mentally incompetent at the time. In his report, forensic psychiatrist said that Hadley had been hearing voices, showing signs of paranoia and expressing delusional ideas for some years. Duke Hadley died from asphyxiation, saying his... Well, the justice went on to say that his mother thought that she was saving him rather than hurting him. So, tragic story there.
Yeah, there are two tragic stories, Phil, and I guess I feel a particular concern. Well, I suppose they're all terrible, but the when people get caught up in these religious and cult things and people die because of these weird beliefs, it's... Well, I guess it's something we were talking to psychologist Glenn Caddy about a couple of weeks ago, and it's something that I don't know whether it's becoming more prevalent, but it's something we've all got to be aware of. And although the two stories you mentioned there, one was by a father, unfortunately, one was by a mother. It's the if you look at the overall statistics, it's quite. Well, it's the opposite, I think, to what most people in the community might believe, and that is that it's that the children are far more likely to be physically abused by their mothers than their fathers. And that being the case, we have to question why there are so many shelters for women and none for men. We can justify a woman's right to take her children to a shelter to escape a violent husband, but there's no shelter in the country that will accept a father with children fleeing an abusive mother. For more on this topic and on the anti-dad culture in general, I would recommend you to any pieces by Barbara Kay. That's spelled K-A-Y. And if you Google Barbara's entries, you'll see she speaks very eloquently and clearly on a number of these types of issues. And she particularly goes into the industry around domestic violence. She has a take on family law and the radical feminism's attack on children's relationships with their fathers, and she's a clear light. Her conclusion in the article that I'm looking at here says that a reference to actually to Martin Luther King, and it was Martin Luther King who said that the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. I hope he's right. I hope that in 50 or certainly in 100 years' time we'll look back on this time at the overt sexism towards males, towards fathers, husbands, sons, brothers, uncles, grandfathers and friends by the family court functionaries, and we'll look back on that and wonder how on earth we ever tolerated it. So let's hope that optimistic take on the development in this area is going to continue. Just coming back to International Men's Day, a bit of a roundup on events. As I mentioned, Ipswich City Council is having its annual IMD breakfast at the Ipswich Civic Centre. In Australia, the Australian Department of Defence has announced it will organise IMD as one of its special calendar events. So it's good to see we're being that the International Men's Day is being supported by the government. In the USA, New York is hosting an Academy Awards for Great Men, which will be a black tie gala event at the Black Spectrum Theatre. Also, the Rails Marketing Group is an entertainment marketing company, and it is organising several entertainment and dance events within the state of Illinois. So I guess that's somewhere around Chicago. Three events are planned for California: at the Fox Sports Grill in Westlake, at Spiritual Warriors California, and at Santa Monica Men's Group Meeting. In Canada, the government has issued proclamations for all citizens delivered in Vancouver and in Oshawa. The proclamation reads, "Now therefore let it be known that the Council of the City hereby proclaims November 19, 2010 as International Men's Day in those cities. And further, let it be known that the Council of the City hereby urges all citizens to take cognizance of this event and fittingly join in its observance." And Vancouver hosts a large IMD event at the Roundhouse Community Centre with numerous speakers, entertainment and various interest groups in attending. There are also moustache-growing competitions that have been announced in France, Italy and Spain through the Discovery Channel, and they will be raising money for prostate cancer. So it really is gaining some momentum around the world. We'll, as I say, next week we'll be speaking to some of the people around the world involved in International Men's Day and what it means for those different countries. Now, I might just mention another publication that many people might find interesting. It's called I Don't Want to Choose, and it's written by Amy Baker, who's been on this program before and will be again, and her colleague Catherine Andre. In I Don't Want to Choose, the book covers how middle school kids can avoid choosing one parent over the other. And this is the unfortunate situation that kids often find themselves in when they're put under enormous pressure by one parent to make the choice and to put one parent over the other. And this is this book gives some very practical suggestions on directly to the child on how do you get out of these situations? How do you emerge without feeling that you've seriously hurt one parent in choosing what the other parent wants that child to do? So I'd recommend that. I think you could get it from Amazon. As I say, it's called I Don't Want to Choose, and the authors are Amy Baker and Catherine Andre. So, yes, it's a good book to look out for. Okay, we might go to a short break, and when we come back, we'll be speaking to Glenn Poole.
What a year can bring. that's what you get, folks, for making whoopee. Another year, or maybe less, was this I hear? Well, can't you guess? She feels neglected, and he's suspected of making whooping. She sits alone most every night. He doesn't phone her, he doesn't write. She says he's busy, then she says, is he? He's making whooping. He doesn't make much money, only 5,000 per. And some judge who thinks he's funny says you'll pay six to earn. And he says, judge, suppose I fail. The judge says, budge, right into jail. You better keep her, I think it's cheaper than making whoopee. Than making whoopee. Than making whoopee.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air. Welcome back to Dads on the Air, and our guest now is Glenn Poole. Glenn is the campaigns and communications consultant and best known for his work as the PR director and media spokesman for the infamous Fathers for Justice campaign that he helped become a global phenomenon in 2003-2004. Glenn, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, look, we've even in the far-off Australia, we heard about your campaigns, or the campaigns for Fathers for Justice, and the I think there were Batman stunts and all sorts of things going on. You know, I happen to believe that to get this thing moving, we're going to need all sorts of different approaches, you know, the quiet backroom boys, but also the spectacular stunts, and I think that's the only way we're going to get there. But so we're all very interested. I just wonder if you could tell us a little bit more, about the activities of Fathers for Justice.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, to say, Bill, I'm no longer working with Fathers for Justice. So that was that was back then, back in the day, okay. And I remain a friend of the organisation. So just to get that clear. And yeah, what we did back then was something very, very important. We took an issue that people weren't looking at, and we made it very, very public. And I can remember within the first 6 months of the campaign being on national radio when we'd done one of the early protests, and being on radio with a guy who was the key family law solicitor in the UK, and basically he was saying, yeah, well, it's not really much of a problem, and you know, sometimes the cases are a bit slow going through court, and that's not very good, but apart from that, not really a problem. And what we really did was actually, and that was the general attitude, that it wasn't really a problem, and we took that issue and we really got the world, by getting the media to focus on it, we became a magnet for people to start coming forward, and people did. And as you well know, there are hundreds, thousands, millions of people affected by the issue of family separation, not just dads, but the children, brothers, sisters, aunties, uncles, grannies, granddads, so many people affected by the issue. And what we did was shine a very strong spotlight on that and then push the issue right up the political agenda. So, yeah, I'm very proud of the work we did back then. And still, as you said, there's an awful lot of work that still needs to be done.
Yes, I mean, it empowered men, I think, at the time to see that some of these things, some of the ordinary dads getting involved. I think, was there a Batman stunt at Buckingham Palace? Was that one of the stunts?
That was, yeah. And what we did is we took, in the early days, Father Suggested was sort of doing direct action, sort of following the suffragettes kind of example, largely focused on family courts, where, you know, obviously a lot of dads end up when they have custody issues. And how we shifted the campaign was to say, well, look, this is a really major national issue which affects every community, every street, every home. We need to get this in everyone's living room. So we took our campaign to some of the nation's big icons, some international icons. So we took Batman to see the Queen, for example, putting him on Buckingham Palace balcony. We took some guys to the House of Commons who threw a condom full of purple powder at Tony Blair during, who was the Prime Minister then, during Prime Minister's Question Time. Yeah, we made the issue visible. Because what made a lot of people angry, a lot of people who've been through the family court, was the denial that there was a problem. And so you would turn up at court or a solicitor's office as a father, and they wouldn't tell you, as they sort of like, as you wrote a blank cheque to them, that all the problems and issues that you could actually potentially face as a separating father. And that, I think, I'm speaking personally now, that was the thing that angered me the most, was the thing that no one had warned me just how bad the system was. And my commitment was that the next generation of fathers in our country should have no excuse not to have at least heard of the fact that there could be problems.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's what Father Suggested has done. Father Suggested still exists on a less high-profile scale than it did back then. But its legacy is that the public know there's this issue called fathers who can't see their kids.
Yes.
So it's out there.
And yes, you mentioned that it's on a lower key now. We don't hear about these stunts, but what's happened there? Do you see that it made a difference? But now that it's moved into a different phase rather than the stunts,
it absolutely did make a difference. I mean, as you know, things take time to change, and we're talking about Father Stress is very much focused on the need for legal change. And there's a whole lot of other reform that needs to take place and a lot of social change that needs to take place in order for every child to have the best possible relationship with their mum and their dad, whatever the family situation. And I can point back to one. It is a political thing. You know, different political parties have different attitudes towards the whole issue. And traditionally, the left has been very uncomfortable with fathers' rights, and we had a very strong Labour government in power under Tony Blair, and then latterly Gordon Brown for 13 years. And there was no hope of family law reform whilst that party was in power. And one of the things we did very early on was we took a delegation to the Conservative Party conference over here, and we got face to face with a lot of key Conservative politicians, and I particularly remember getting face to face with Michael Howard at the time when he was our leader of the opposition, leader of the Conservative Party. And he came up, he was a barrister, and he came up to me and he said, "I've got a bone to pick with you chaps. It's all very well calling for, you know, law reform, but you can't legislate for human behaviour." And we said, "But the thing is, Michael, you know, the problem over here is that people go through courts. They get their court order, as probably happens in Australia. Fathers get their court order. They walk away thinking the job's done. And then they find very quickly that those court orders aren't upheld. And in the case of the UK at the time, about 50% of court orders weren't upheld and nothing was done to enforce them. And he didn't like that. As a solicitor, actually, he was quite outraged at that, more than, in some ways, more than being outraged at the sort of the human heartache. He was outraged that people would defy the legal system. And that was a key turning point, because he then went on to put family law reform into the Conservative Party's next manifesto. And now, this year, we have a Conservative Liberal government in power now, and family law reform is on the agenda. So now it's been talked about.
Look, that's great. It's amazing how many similarities there are between Australia and the UK. I mean, we even had a Prime Minister, John Howard. So, we've faced the same problems. We've had a long-serving Labor government. They nearly got put out. Well, we've got a hung parliament, same as you have. But the difference here is that Labor has been talking about winding back the modest reforms that were made in 2006. So the fight is still on. And I wonder, what would you see as the key issues facing men and boys today?
Wow, that's a big question, isn't it? Well, actually, when you step back and look at the whole picture, and you look, what I'm doing now, one of the reasons I've come on is to talk a little bit about International Men's Day and the work that we're doing in the UK with a new organisation I'm working with called the Men's Network, which is looking at a whole range of issues for men and boys. And we've taken the attitude of, let's see what we can do in one city and do it really, really well. And two of the key issues we face in our city. So the city's Brighton and Hove. It's got a population of about 250,000 people, quarter of a million people. Got a mixture of good wealth and also some quite poor areas. About 50 miles from London, on the coast. I would say it's the closest the UK gets to Byron Bay, Bill. That's probably the best way I can describe Brighton. Okay. It's not quite there, but it's kind of, it's a bit alternative in parts.
So I think you know Byron Bay, don't you, through your own family connections?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I love the place. Looking forward to coming back soon. And so to answer your question, so in our city, what we're looking at is, now this is the two biggest inequalities for me. The first one is that a boy born in the poor area of our city is looking forward to 13 years less of life than a girl who's born in the wealthy area of our city. Now, that's just in one city, 13 years of life less. That is a major, major inequality. Mm. And then when you look at actually how much money we put into projects for different groups in our city, for children, for older people, for gay people, for black and minority ethnic groups, for disabled groups, for women's groups, for men's groups. When you look at the money we put into projects, women get 1,300 times more funding than men. So women live 13 years longer, and then they get 1,300 times more funding for projects to support them. That is a massive, massive issue. Whether you're a father, a boy who's struggling with education, an unemployed man, a homeless man, a desperate, suicidal man, there isn't support there to help you.
Yes, we have a similar story here, and that also extends into the area of suicides, where in Australia there are at least 5 men a day committing suicide, and that's far in excess of the number of women. I guess we don't want to ignore the women either, but there's just the resources aren't being put into the men's side of the equation.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, Bill, is that what's tended to happen, and I certainly first experienced this when I started campaigning with Fathers for Justice. Like many people in any area of life, the reason that I started doing that was because I've got my own personal experience to it. And to me, in my world, it was clear that there was a problem, because I knew, because I was experiencing it on a daily basis. But what tends to happen is we've got so used to relating to men as the ruling oppressor class and women as the victim, that the moment you actually stand up and start to say something on behalf of men, people don't know how to relate to it. And they can't, and what they start to hear is you say, I think we should help, say, improve health services for men. But by the time those words hit their ears, it's turned into, I hate all women and we want to oppress women. So, you know what I mean? It's like people are really uncomfortable with the idea of simply focusing on men and boys as a group and saying, do you know what? Yeah, sure, women and girls have got problems and no one's saying don't deal with them.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about over here is that men and boys have also got problems too. We're all human beings, and we need to focus on both of those groups as individual groups because we're different, and we need we have different needs, and we need to be helped and supported in different ways. So that's been the issue: is there's been this assumption that men are okay, and then women are unequal. So therefore, we need to put all our attention on women and girls.
Yes,
and it's not true because clearly we've got in our city we've got a female MP, fantastic. Now, she is going to be damn sight more equal than the homeless guy sleeping on the street in our city.
Mm.
You know, it's a far less black and white world than saying that women are more unequal than men. And nor would it be sensible to say men are more unequal than women. That would be silly too. It's about there are human beings out there and they've got needs and we need to help and support them.
Yes, we need to definitely get the pendulum back in the middle somewhere. But look, it's great, Glenn, that you've taken this on and you've been now working in this area for quite some years, I think.
Yeah, 10 years, I guess, yeah.
And yet, personally, your result isn't such a bad one. You finished up with shared parenting of your daughter, I believe. So it's great that even though your one has reasonably well resolved, but at the same time you're carrying on the fight for other men who find themselves in this situation.
I did get involved for selfish reasons first off, because my situation was that I was actually a dad at home. So compared to a woman who was a woman at home looking after the kid, I got a bad deal. But compared to some of the great guys that I know here over in the UK and around the world now, who, you know, haven't great guys I'd be happy to have look after my own children, my own child, who haven't seen their own kids for 5, 10, 15 years, I consider myself very, very blessed to have a really great ongoing relationship with my daughter. And I bring the fact that I'm a father of a daughter to the work that I do, because I'm really committed that nothing that we do to help men and boys is negative towards girls and women.
Yes.
Because I'm a father of a 13-year-old daughter, and like any proud father, I want her to have the best possible life. And I don't want her to face any barriers or discrimination or anything in life just because she's a woman. I wouldn't. I'd be a crazy dad if I wanted that. And at the same time, I want to make sure that the next generation of boys grow up to be men who are respected and have every opportunity in life to fulfill their greatest potential. And I want to see us move towards, away from the kind of like pro-feminist, anti-feminist kind of black and white kind of approach, and get towards a more kind of pro-human approach. So can we be mature enough to say, do you know what, I'm really pro-male and I'm proudly pro-male, and it doesn't mean to say I'm anti-female. And for women to be able to say, do you know what, I'm really pro-woman, I'm really proudly pro-woman, but I can do that in a way which isn't anti-male.
Yes, and perhaps a big help there would be when we can get women on to support these men's rights. And I'm just wondering how we can perhaps get men more motivated to take these on in the way that you have, for instance, because a lot of men they resolve their issues either well or badly and then sort of drift away and, go off to lick their wounds.
Yeah, you're quite right there. It's that's been part of our challenge, I think. I think that's why one of the reasons why we've got to this situation, Bill, is that for whatever reason, men haven't been as good as women have at coming together as a group, as a gender, and fighting for our rights. Maybe it was because we were busy going to work.
Yes.
Maybe it's because we don't like to cause a fuss, because we've been brought up to be strong and tough and not cause a fuss. I don't know exactly what the reason is, but it's absolutely clear that our failure over the last 30 or 40 years as a group to come together more effectively has contributed to the situation we're in right now. So the challenge, quite rightly, as you say, is then how do we do that more effectively in the future? And for me, and I don't know if this is the right answer, but for me, One of the really irritating and infuriating things about being in the men's movement, Bill, is that we don't tend to work together very effectively, which is why it's wonderful to be here in the UK having a conversation with you guys over in Australia.
Yes.
A connection which has been made through the guys over there who are working on International Men's Day in November, who've
yes.
managed to get all around the world. There's I think in 41 countries now there are organisations taking part in International Men's Day on the 19th of November, and that's something that I'm really committed to seeing grow. And actually, we're marking it for the first time in the UK this year. So we're taking a very proud stand of we'll connect with anyone. We'll connect with a really sort of angry, sort of militant father's rights group, and we'll connect with a really soft, cuddly, touchy-feely,
yes.
go out into the woods and hug the trees kind of men's group. We want to make connections with all men and actually get them to see themselves as part of the whole and not as just an individual group. Or we're the group that looks after domestic violence. We're the group that sits in a circle and talks about our feelings. We're the group that looks after father's rights. You know, we're too disconnected.
Yes.
And really need to start working with each other more effectively.
I completely agree. We're speaking with Glenn Poole, who's chair of the Men's Network in England. Now, Glenn, you mentioned the project with the that small city, Brighton and Hove.
Yeah.
What other activities are the Men's Network getting up to?
Okay, so we've divided our work over four key strands. So we're looking at men's health, which, as we've already touched upon, is a major issue, both in terms of life expectancy, all those diseases that we're more likely to get, suicide, all that kind of stuff, alcohol abuse, drug abuse. Men have a much greater propensity to all of that for a variety of reasons. So men's health, really important. We want men to live long, happy, healthy lives so they can really get the full experience of this gorgeous life that we have. Then there's education, and boys in education are really falling behind at every stage, and that's just not acceptable. And men aren't in schools, you know. In our city, we've got boys that need mentoring and support. So when you look at the boys and girls who need mentoring and support, it's mostly boys who need the support, but about 80 or 90% of the people mentoring are women. Nothing wrong with women mentoring boys, that's fantastic, but clearly we need more men in schools helping boys to do much better. So that's a key area for us. Then there's the whole fatherhood issue, which you and I know really, really well, and we're very committed to actually making a radical difference to fathers, whatever stage of fatherhood they're at. So we're very, very involved in working with fathers. And then the other one is the whole world of you know, crime and antisocial behaviour. And I'm really personally particularly very interested in this idea that why is there a campaign against violence against women and girls internationally, but no campaign against violence against men and boys?
Yes, well, we've been arguing that for a while, that it's extraordinary that they, and it's the same in Australia, we have the White Ribbon Campaign, and it's violence against women by men, when really the campaign should be against all violence. I mean, how could anyone object to that?
Absolutely. And it's just a nonsense. And again, it's one of these areas where I think we get stuck into a kind of silly argument about which is worse, against men or against women. It's violence is violence, and let's stop it. You know,
yes.
You can't just say that, oh, we're only against violence against women, when actually men experience more violence at every stage of their life. In our city, you're twice as likely as any other group to be a victim of violence if you're a young man aged 16 to 25.
Mm.
But there's no campaign against that. There's a really strong campaign against violence against women, and so there should be.
Mm.
But there should be equally a robust and rigorous campaign against violence against men. I'm really passionate about that, and I want to see us start to connect with people like you and other organisations around the globe and actually start to make that one of our key international campaigns. Because figures from the UN show that men are twice as likely around the globe to die of violence every single year.
Yes.
So that is not acceptable. That's something we need to stop. And it starts with us saying, first, we as a world do not tolerate violence, and we don't tolerate violence against men and boys. It's a very specific and distinct kind of violence, which somehow we think is acceptable because men are tough and strong. Well, no, it ain't acceptable, and I think it needs to stop.
Yes, well, now the Men's Network is doing something about all that, and it's a charitable organisation. Where do you get your funding from, Glenn?
Well, we have many resources available to us. And one of the biggest ones is money. we have energy and passion, as you can probably tell. We have a great group of guys, a couple of gals too, who are putting in loads of time and energy. We've got some great ideas, and we're slowly, bit by bit, getting little bits of funding. But we're not an organisation that will only do things if they've got funding for it. Mm. We're kind of like, have you ever seen that film? I forget who it is, but he builds the baseball pitch in his back garden. And the catch line is, if you build it, they will come. Well,
yes.
That's the approach we're taking. And for me, this has been almost 10 years in the planning, in the sense that what I saw when I was working at the height of the Fathers for Justice campaign there, what I saw was actually the big missing was the need for a kind of ministry for men, looking at men and boys right across every area of social policy. And it's kind of, the men's network is a kind of a mini ministry for men. That's what that's how it's set up. And a lot of what we're doing is actually is working with existing organisations. So we're working with the health service, we're working with the local council, we're working with the police, we're working with other people, rather than being on the outskirts campaigning and complaining about what's not going right, actually getting right into the heart of the machine and going, we're here to help. We want to highlight where you're not doing things the way we think you should be doing it, but then we want to help you. That's all we're here to do. And that's what I think men have not been very good at doing, is coming together as a group and actually providing the solutions. And that's what we're starting to do in Brighton and Hove.
Yes, and look, I think we should learn from that in Australia, because we have a number of disparate groups, but we don't really have an overarching body that can perhaps bring these together. I'm with Phil York here from Dads in Distress, and they do enormously good work in supporting, well, dads who get into these problems. Actually, they've broadened it recently for anyone that gets into these sort of family problems.
Right.
But they're at the
coalface.
The coalface. That's
yeah,
it.
Absolutely. How are you, Glenn?
Yeah. Great to hear from you.
Thanks, mate.
So,
how are you doing?
Yeah, so we need to, similarly, I think we need to focus on and get all the men's groups working in the one direction, even if they might come from there are some, say, with a Christian approach, there are some with all sorts of different slants on it, but if we can get them all working in the same direction, I think we'll go a lot further. And,
yeah, and people start to take you seriously.
That's right.
And they know what we're finding. We've been doing this now for 7 or 8 months in our city, and now people are coming to us. So now when people are, so just give you one, it's just a small example, but it's a live example, because I was at a meeting today. We work with the voluntary sector in our city, and we meet once every couple of months with them about what they're doing all across the city for volunteers. And so we have this meeting, and someone shows up from the health service, and they have this kind of project called Health Trainers, where you, if you've got any kind of like area of your health you want to improve, like your fitness or your diet or smoking or drinking, you can actually get a one-to-one health trainer to help and support you. And a lot of them are volunteers. And I just sat down and spoke with the woman who runs that, and it's like all the health trainers are women, and pretty much most of the people that benefit are women. And she just looked at me and said, we should be doing this for men, shouldn't we? And I said, you should.
Yeah.
I said, but I don't know how we go about that. I said, well, you talk to someone like us. And then the conversation's happening, and now it's possible that in the future they'll actually, you know, guess what? They'll recruit male health trainers, and they'll actually go out and actually provide services directly to men, instead of actually just sitting in an office with women health trainers going, you know, with walls painted pink and flowers on the wall saying, why don't men show up in here? I don't understand this. So, you know, it's kind of stuff like that, because we're holding the flag.
Yes.
So it's not that we have to do everything, but it's like wherever there's a big meeting in our city, we're in there holding the flag. And bit by bit, we're being a magnet, and people are coming to us. And by being in the room, just by being in the room and watching sometimes, conversations that wouldn't have happened start to happen, because they know we're there representing the voice of men and boys.
Yes, now you must be making some progress there, because I think you've set yourself a 5-year deadline to complete the UK phase of that project. And then we're hoping to see you in Australia, is that right?
That's right, yeah. It's purely for personal reasons.
Yeah.
I need a bit of sunshine, and my other half has spent 12 years of her life living in Sydney and Byron, and and is dying to get back. In fact, she'll be over next year for a visit herself. So I've made a promise that I'll sort out the Mellon boys in England in the next 5 years. And then we'll come over and see how you guys are doing.
Oh, that sounds great.
Hopefully you guys will have it all sorted anyway.
Yeah.
And we can just go down the beach and do a bit of surfing or something. That'd be great.
That sounds good, doesn't it? Well, you're certainly very welcome over here. So perhaps if I could just ask you, what should our listeners do if they want to make a difference? I mean, should they go to your website and see the things that you're doing and perhaps extend
great
that over
question, here? Yeah. I tell you, one of the things we're doing, we really are looking at what we're doing is building an international network. Though our work is focused on one city, we want to borrow and learn from really good stuff over in other countries. So, I know, just give one example, two examples actually. The Men's Shed movement, we love that. And the 3 in 10 campaign on domestic violence in your country. I've had a look at it. It looks great. We've got
it's actually
like that over here.
1 in 3, I think, is the title. But yeah, but you're close enough.
Yeah.
one in three in either words or figures, and you'll get all that information.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I had a quick look, and it just looks like a brilliant initiative. And also, that's one of those things that bringing different people together to sort of say this enough is enough. We've got to take a different approach. So we love that, and I want to bring that over here. And similarly, when we do really great things over here, I want to be able to export it. Not that we do it, but that people like yourselves can look into our city and go, wow, that's good. Let's get that over in Australia. Or there's something really great happening in America. Let's get it over here. Kind of like the McDonald's of the men's movement world, where we can just take this really, really great ideas and spread them around really, really quickly and put fries and a milkshake in there too. So what can you do is the question. Well, look, our website's crap. It's really rubbish because we've got no money, but we've got a really vibrant and growing community on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So if people on Facebook, come and find the men's network and hook up with us, friend us. And we're posting stuff every single day, not just what we're doing, but what we're seeing other people doing. And that for me is the start. And then actually, if you're passionate about something, get out and make a difference. That's, you only live one life. And part of life for me is leaving the world a little bit better than you found it. It's about leaving a little bit of a legacy. So if it's something that you're passionate about, whether it's your kids in school, whether it's about the health of men, whether it's about the raw deal that fathers get out there and help someone. Do it tomorrow.
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right. You're an inspiration, Glenn, so I hope all our listeners are going to take note of that. We're just about out of time, but we're speaking with Glenn Poole, who's chair of the Men's Network in England. Now, I'm a bit outdated in my technology. It's Facebook they should go to. Is there an address, or how do you get onto the Facebook for the Men's Network?
Search for the Men's Network, and it's got men's got a little apostrophe after men,
mm-hmm.
M-E-N apostrophe S. Search for the Men's Network, and you'll find us. Or search for International Men's Day.
Yes.
Which is that site's been run by Jason Thompson over there in Australia. So that's a good page too.
Yes.
So come and find us on Facebook.
We'll be having a special next week on International Men's Day. So,
Glenn,
thank you very much for coming on the program. It's great to talk to you and hear all your enthusiasm and that great work you're doing. And we wish you all the best and look forward to seeing you when you come out to Australia.
Yeah, I'll look you up, but thanks for giving me all this airtime. It's been brilliant.
That's great. All right, thanks again. That's Glenn Poole.
Somebody's lying. I know when somebody's lying. know that somebody's lying. I know that somebody's lying. Give me a sign and let me know we're through. If you don't love me like I love you, but if you cry at night the way I do, I know that somebody's lying. So please return the love.
Dads in Distress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
Well, that's it for Dads in Distress. That's it for Dads on the Air. And so from Phil York from Dads in Distress and Bill Cable from Mediate Now, we'll have to say farewell now, but we'll be back next week with a big show. We'll have interviews all around the world, and we'll be looking forward to that on lead into International Men's Day. So if you want to listen to the show again, you can go to www.dadsontheair.net. And in the meantime, have a great week. We'll see you all next week.
We're dads on the air.